So I want to welcome those of you who are joining us from all over the world, all over the country, our Atlanta area churches, those of you who are camping, those of you who are at the lake and at the beach. We are not jealous. We really aren't. We're glad that you're joining us from wherever you are. And we hope you sang along if you watched the music. Anyway, it's just so fun to be part of an expanding network of churches all over the country, all over the world. Can't wait to give you some more updates on what's happening around the world because of what you do here and what we do in the city of Atlanta is so very exciting. And if you're joining us again for the first time or the first time in a long time, we believe that it's all about doing the will of God and following Jesus practically that makes a difference in the world. And we believe that we're making a difference in the world. And we're glad that you have joined us. And if you're not a Christian or you're skeptical about Christianity, if you're a skeptic, you have every reason to be because of what you've experienced. We would never judge you for that. But we hope maybe somebody you meet or something you hear today would just cause you to be curious once again about faith and what God has for you. Today is the fourth and final part of this series that we've been in for the past few weeks called Too Good to Miss. And the subtitle is three things you can't afford to miss and how to ensure you won't. And the premise of this whole series is I believe that most of you have so much to look forward to in life. And even though we don't know each other, I don't want you to miss it. I don't want you to not only to miss it, I don't want you to miss out on the good things in life and the things that God has for you in life, all the good that you have the potential to miss out on because either you were misled or maybe you got distracted. And many of us miss out on the best things in life because we get distracted. Immediate overwhelms ultimate, but ultimate's always more important than immediate. And we've talked about that. And the good news, if there's some good news, is most misses in life are inconsequential. You know, they're small things. You know, there's going to be another opportunity. You're going to get more offers. You're going to get another, you get to go to the game again. There's going to be another game. There's other tickets. There's more invitations coming. There's another opportunity. But some misses in life are very consequential. You get one chance at it. You get one shot at it. You get one opportunity to. You get one season. And if you miss one of those, that's rough. Because there's no going back. And you've seen that play out in the lives of friends. You've seen that play out perhaps in the life of a family member. Perhaps there was a season you look back on and you're like, I just missed it. My priorities were wrong. So you understand the gravity of this topic. But when you think about friends or family members, as you stood back and watched it played out, you had this thought, looking back at their lives, especially if it's somebody that you loved, you just thought, all they had to do was, but they didn't. All he had to do was just go to class, you know? All he had to do was prioritize his marriage. All she needed to do was just go to counseling. All they needed to do was, you know, take better care of their health, pay more attention to their kids, travel less. I mean, it wasn't complicated and they missed it. So again, the premise of the series is there's three things I'm convinced, this is just my opinion, that you just can't afford to miss in life. We talked about the first one. We said, first thing you don't want to miss is Jesus. And this wasn't about church or religion. This was about the teaching of Jesus, that you don't want to miss the teaching of Jesus. Because if you had been following the teaching of Jesus during the greatest regret of your life, you would have probably avoided that regret. Because of who Jesus is even, but because of what Jesus taught. So we talked about don't miss Jesus or don't dismiss Jesus. The second one we said was don't miss family. That's last time we were together. And today, I want to give you the final thing that I'm just convinced you just can't afford to miss. And here's why this one's important. This potential miss determines how people experience you right now, and it will determine what they say about you later. This particular miss, you don't want to miss this because what we're going to talk about today determines how people experience you right now in your family, at work, wherever you go. And it's going to determine what people say about you in the end. And that means you have the opportunity to get this one right every single day. But if you miss too many days, you pay. So the third thing you can't afford to miss, don't miss great. Not famous, great. Great is not the same as famous. In fact, you may know some famous people and they're not really all that great. In fact, you kind of wish you'd never met them. You like the idea of them, and then you got close to them and you thought, okay, they're a famous person, they're an influential person, but I don't think they're great. Because great, as you're gonna see today, great is greater than famous. But the problem is, and the challenge for many of us, especially in a world saturated with social media, is there are immediate rewards. There are immediate rewards for being famous. There are immediate rewards for being well-known. So we feel pressure. Many of us feel pressure internally and externally to get, you know, to accomplish something great, to do something great, to become something great, to get our names out there. But there is virtually no cultural pressure to be truly great. So we miss it and then we regret it. Bottom line, everybody can't be famous, but everybody has the potential for great. So here's my point today, in case you missed it. Here's, just want to make it super clear. Here's the point today. You have an opportunity to be great every single day. And here's the point. The cumulative value, that's the key. The cumulative value of opting for great day after day is something you don't want to miss. But if you're not looking for it, and if I'm not looking for that opportunity day after day and every day, if you're not looking for it and I'm not looking for it, we will miss it. So I want to invite all of us, whether you're a religious person or not, maybe you come from a different faith tradition, maybe you used to be a Christian, you're not so sure anymore, you're watching with friends at home, wherever you are, I want to challenge you to begin asking what I think is a great question. And then we're gonna define great. But you don't even need my definition for great. You know great when you see it, and you know great when you experience it. So here's the question I wanna challenge you to ask. Maybe write it down somewhere, put it on a mirror. You can abbreviate it if you don't want people to know, you know, what's on your dashboard or, you know, wherever you're looking at stuff. But here's the question I would love for us to all ask, maybe every day for the rest of our lives. What would great do? What would great do? If I were really trying to be great, if I was really trying to say, what would great do? What, and to change the emphasis, what would great do? Because it's doing that makes the difference. Our internal motivation, our interior selves that nobody sees, it's important. But it's what we do that makes a difference. What would great do? What would choosing great look like in your life? What would choosing great look like in this particular situation? What would, to tease it out a little bit further, what would a great friend do? What would a great father do? What would a really great mother do? What would a great husband do? Men, you know, you're at home, if you're married and you got that, aren't that glass that was orange juice in it, and you're by yourself and you open the dishwasher and they're all clean. Maybe I've just said something about myself without realizing it. Anyway, what would a great wife do, right? What would a great son do? What would a great daughter do? Can I just say something to all the teenagers or college students, but especially middle school and high school students, if you're watching or you're listening or you're here today, did you know you have an opportunity to break away from the pack and not simply treat your parents like other middle schoolers and high schoolers treat their parents just because you're in middle school and high school? You have an opportunity to be great. In fact, I'll tell you a secret about parents having raised three kids. Students, if you begin to act great, and I'm gonna define it for you in just a minute. If you begin to act great, your parents might pass out. If they don't pass out, they will certainly give you more privileges. I'm just saying, okay? So you have an opportunity to stop and say, before I have a bad attitude, before I, you know, mouth off, what would a great 16-year-old do? What would a great person do? What would a great employer do? What would a great employee do? What would a great citizen do? What would a great leader do? Now, if you're not a Jesus follower, again, you're not a Christian, not a religious person, okay, this is a big, wide question. And here's what I would suggest. You should define great for yourself, because again, you know it when you see it, you know it when you experience it. You should decide what is a great person? What is the essence of greatness? And you should write that down. And then you should aim for it every single day of your life in every arena of life. It'll make you a better husband and father, employer, employee, a better student. It'll make you a better everything. So just decide what is great and shoot for great, but don't miss great, because it defines how people experience you every day, and it defines what people will say about you eventually. But if you're a Christian or you're attempting to be a Jesus follower, we don't get to define it. It comes pre-defined. Jesus left us with a recipe for greatness. Here's what happened. Toward the end of his ministry, he's on his way to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover with his apostles, with his disciples, the 12 apostles. Now, this was a really big deal to celebrate Passover in the city of Jerusalem. I mean, followers or sons and daughters of Abraham, we would say Jewish people, they celebrated Passover all over the world. But to be in Jerusalem to celebrate Passover was a huge deal. So tens of thousands, some say hundreds of thousands of people would come from all over the region to be inside the city of Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. And Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover with his apostles. He's on the road. People are streaming in from all over the place. The roads are packed. And he knows this is his date with fate. He will not emerge from the city alive. So as he's going along, he calls his 12 apostles in close as they walk, and he begins to tell them what to expect, because they're expecting him to rip off his rabbi robe and proclaim himself king. In fact, that's the rumor. So there are hundreds of people, not just on their way to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover, they are in the trail or the wake of Jesus and the apostles, thinking, this is what we have longed for and prayed for. This is what our parents promised and our grandparents hoped would happen in their day and age. We are about to regain our independence, because there's a rumor that that rabbi is no mere rabbi. He is God's Messiah, and we're going to be in the city when this happens. So as they're going along, Jesus begins to set the expectations for his apostles. And he says, guys, it's not what you think. When we get there, I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be arrested by the chief priest and his henchmen. And I'm going to be mishandled. I'm going to be condemned to death. But because they can't put me to death, they're going to hand me over to the Romans. The Romans are going to humiliate me. He tells them, spit on me, flog me, and then they're going to execute me. Any questions? You guys still want to go? And they're like, oh yeah. And then it's the only time I have found in the Gospels where it looks like Jesus is in a hurry. He gets like, he's walking so fast, he's out ahead of the pack as they make their way to Jerusalem. And the very next statement, because what he has just said and what happens next are connected. The very next statement is this. And coming up to him, because they had to walk kind of quick to catch up to him. And coming up to him, James and John, these are some of the original, you know, men that Jesus called to be his apostles. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come up to Jesus, and they say to him, they look back over their shoulder to make sure the other guys can't hear him. They say, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Okay, this sounds like some one of your kids, right? It's like, will you do me, will you do whatever? It's like, and Jesus says what a good parent says. He says, okay, you're gonna have to give me a little bit more information, okay, before I just say, yes, I'll do whatever you ask. What is it you want? And they look at each other like, you ask him. And eventually one says, okay, hey, would you let one of us sit on your right and the other on your left? Asking for positions of authority and power. The right and the left of the king, those are positions, and they recognize he's a king, and they think when we get to Jerusalem, this is gonna be amazing. But then they're real specific. Let one of us sit at your right, one at your left, in your glory. In other words, after you terminate your enemies, and we would prefer to skip the spitting and torture part, whatever that was about. Like after all that, when you're in your glory, when everybody recognizes you as your king, could we be on your left and your right, positions of honor and authority? And Jesus says to them, and this is my version. You can look at exactly what Jesus said. I'm sort of taking some liberties. Jesus basically says, do you guys think you have what it takes? I mean, do you think you have what it takes to endure? Well, you're gonna have to endure to get to the other side of that? I mean, can you do that? And they're like, Oh yeah, we can, they answered. Well, the other 10 guys hear about this conversation somehow, and Mark tells us that they were indignant. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John, and they weren't offended on Jesus' behalf. What they should have said is, guys, he just told us he's gonna be arrested and crucified, and all you care about is yourself. That's not their concern. Their concern was that these two guys were gonna get ahead of the rest of them, and next thing you know, they're having a Kingdom of God org chart argument. Like, who's gonna answer to who, and who's gonna report to who, and who's gonna be, how far down are we gonna be? And Jesus is like, we've been together 3 years, 3.5 years, and you still don't get it. And every time I read this narrative, and I've read it so many times, I'm reminded that sometimes I still don't get it. And I'm afraid too many Christians don't get it. And the church doesn't get it. So Jesus pulls them off the side of the road. You guys, everybody else, go ahead. Gets them alone, sits them down, and says, okay, let's go over this one more time. You know that those who are regarded as rulers, kings, governors, you know how those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them? And the Greek text in the Gospel of Mark uses a term that's a very rare term, kata kuriuo is the term. And basically what it means is, you know how the Gentile leaders, the kings and the governors, subdue and use people for their own benefit, for their own good? They use their power and resources to ensure that they get more power and resources. And the apostles are like, yeah, we know how it works. And then Jesus doubles down, and their high officials, their kings and governors, and their high officials exercise authority over them. In other words, they use their authority. They use their authority to force their will on the people that they rule. And the apostles are like, yeah, that's how the world works. And it's our turn. Jesus, why do you think we're following you into Jerusalem? You're the king, and we're gonna be close to the king, and we wanna be as close to the king as we can possibly be. And what Jesus says next, these next four words, this next line is so in my head where it needs to be, because I've read this and studied this, and I love this interchange and this interaction, maybe because it's for me or for people like me. Because people like me are prone to forget. And we settle, if we're not careful, and you settle, because many of you are in positions of leadership, we tend to settle for being known, and we miss our opportunity for great. So Jesus pauses. You know how the world works, yeah. You know how the rulers rule, yeah. You know how they prioritize what they need over everybody else, yes. And he looks at each one of them and he says, not so with you. Not in my kingdom, not my followers. I'm flipping the script. I'm introducing a kingdom with a new power paradigm. And you guys should have picked up on this by now. If you're gonna be part of my kingdom, you gotta quit thinking that way. This is not another kingdom of men. This is not another version of an old thing. It's a brand new thing. I'm introducing something brand new into the world. And if you're gonna be part of it, he was saying to them, you've got to understand how this works. And then he says this, instead, not so with you, instead. And he uses a Greek term that is the strongest term of contrast in the Greek language. It's like the word but in capital letters with exclamation marks. But, or instead of, or on the contrary, or just the opposite is the idea. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you, you guys want to be great? They're like, yeah, good. Anyone who wants to be great among you. And I think he looks at James and John and smiles. You want to be great? You came up to me wanting to be great. You want to be great? And then Jesus defines great. Kingdom of God, great. And as we're about to see, these are the opportunities that come our way every single day. Fast and furious every single day. And they're so easy to miss. And I don't want you to miss it. And I don't want to miss it. I don't want the church to miss it. I don't want Christians around our nation and the world to miss it. Because when we miss this, we miss the kingdom of God ethic. And when we miss this, we miss Jesus. Here's what he said. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first, and I was tempted at this point in the sermon to put dot, 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 not give you these and just ask the question, but I'm not. How many of you want to be first? And the reason I didn't want to do that to you is that my hand would be up. Because I want to be first. I mean, don't you get there early so you can be first? Don't you call early so you can be first? I mean, isn't there something in all of us, and appropriately and not so appropriately, that we want to be first? And we're like, yeah, it's in me. It's in us to want to be first. Jesus knew that. He says, in my kingdom, here's how first works. And whoever wants to be first must become the slave of all. This means one thing to us. It meant something entirely different in the first century. But here's his point. Kingdom great is a race to the back of the line. And the more influence and resources we have, the faster we should run. The more influence and resources I have, that you have, that we have, the faster to the back of the line we should run, because our temptation, my temptation, our daily temptation is to go first because we deserve it, we've earned it, we've worked for it, and we are entitled to it. And Jesus says, when you start feeling that, that is your cue to do great. And before they can raise their hand and object, Jesus removes all of their excuses and removes all of my excuses. He says, for, I'm not done. He says, I'm not just asking you to do this. Even referring to himself, even the Son of Man, this is a phrase from the book of Daniel, where Daniel refers to the Son of Man, the one that God will send to rule and judge over all of man, to judge all of mankind in the end. And he takes on this brand, this title over and over. He says, for even the Son of Man, talking about himself, even I did not come to be served. I'm not just saying this is for you guys. Even I didn't come to be served. But, and it's not neutral. It's like, I'm not going to serve you, but I don't expect you to serve me. He goes, no, it's not that. Not only did I not come to be served, I have come to proactively serve. And then I imagine as he's talking to them, he pauses and he looks down the road to Jerusalem and he says, and to give his life as a ransom for many. How far are you going to take this serve other people thing, Jesus? To give my life away as a ransom for many. That is great. The reason everyone should consider following Jesus, even before you consider Jesus to be who Jesus claimed to be, is because Jesus, who claimed to be God's unique Son, God in a body, God who came to explain God, get this, never played the God card on his own behalf. Growing up, I know this is kind of weird. I haven't shared this before, so I would rather you not share this with anybody. Growing up, I was constantly tempted to play the son of Dr. Charles Stanley card. And many times I did it. It was great. That's just the father. That's just, Jesus, the Son of God, never played the God card for himself, on his own behalf. And then he says to you and he says to me, follow me. What would great do if great was you? What would great do if great was you? Do you want to be great? Don't miss this part. Look up here. Don't miss great or you'll regret it. And we've all missed it. Look up here. Don't miss great or you'll regret it. Those are our regrets. Your greatest regret is connected to your decision to be less than great. Your greatest regret is connected to your decision. You know why? We chose selfish over great. We powered up instead of apologizing. We defended instead of just deferring. We pretended we didn't notice. And then later we felt bad that we pretended not to notice because we noticed, but if we noticed, we would have to do something. We didn't want to do something, so we pretended not to notice. We insisted on our way. Then we punished him and we punished her, or we punished them because we didn't get our way and we were not great, and those are our regrets. We didn't tell him the truth because there was something we wanted. We didn't tell her the truth because there was something we wanted. And there's our regret. We chose ungreat and we regret it. And I don't know how this works. You know, heaven and Jesus and all those things, and you don't want to hear the preacher say that, but I don't know how all of this works. But I just wonder, if at times Jesus doesn't look at me or look at us or look at Christians in general in the United States and think, wait, guys, you sing about the cross every Sunday. You're grateful for the cross because you've got forgiveness of sin. A bunch of you wear a cross, but on a daily basis, you won't embrace the cross. You refuse the cross. Be great, like your King is great. It won't cost you your life. It just costs some time and some pride. And it's perhaps our greatest opportunity in the world to leave a dent on the world. Fast forwarding, they eventually make it to Jerusalem. There's so much drama, so much drama. We've talked about some of that. We'll talk about it again. They're there about a week. And finally, the gathering, the Passover, time for the Passover meal comes along. They get a room. Jesus gets a room. He's there with just the apostles, the 12 of them and him. And then this remarkable statement by the gospel writer, John. In fact, the only way John knew this was after the resurrection. Jesus, I'm sure, imagine the questions they had after the resurrection, like where were, you know, I mean, all the questions that we wonder. And in those conversations, Jesus filled in a lot of gaps, and this is one of the gaps he must have filled in, because John tells us that while they were gathered for Passover, and you gotta get the picture, they're not sitting around a table. One of the gospel writers says they were reclining, which means they had a very low table, a short table, and they're on an elbow. So all of them are facing each other with their bodies kind of sprawled out like a fan all the way around this table. And John tells us this is amazing, that while they were having this Passover meal at some point, Jesus, knowing, like it dawns on him in a new and fresh and powerful way, recognizes Jesus knowing that the Father had given all things, that God the Father had given all things into his hands. And Matthew, at the end of Matthew, when we have you read about the Great Commission, we call it the Great Commission, Jesus says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And apparently, this is the moment when it dawned on Jesus in some new kind of fresh way that all authority, imagine that, all authority has been given to him. It has been placed in his hands, and that he had come from God, had come forth from God, and he was going back to God. All authority over all things. It's the picture. It's like God the Father said, here are the keys and I'm going back inside. Do with them what you will. Here's all power and all authority, hands off. Do with it what you will. And the very next move he makes, it's not even a break in the sentence structure. It's like as soon as that dawned on him, he got up from supper and he laid aside his rabbinic robe, his outer garments, and he took a towel and he wrapped it around his waist, and they panic. It's like, he's about to wash our feet. And then they realize a servant never showed up, a slave never showed up to wash feet, and they never considered washing each other's feet. In that culture, a rabbi who had disciples did a lot of things for the rabbi. They never washed their feet. Only a servant or a slave washed anybody's feet. It was as low as you could possibly go. And Jesus is about to wash their feet? And they had seen what he had been able to do with those hands, and those hands were gonna touch their dirty feet. And again, they're all fanned out. They are all eye to eye with each other, and Jesus is behind them on his knees, working his way around that table. And I think I would say you could hear a pin drop. I think the only thing you heard drop was the water in that basin as he washed their feet, and this took a while. And when he's finished, he's on his knees at their feet. He stands back up and his hands are filthy and he's wet and he puts his rabbinic robe back on. And then he asks us a question. Of course, the question was to them, but it's a question that leapfrogs into the future, into our world. And here's this question after he washes their feet. Do you understand what I have done for you? Do you understand what I have done for you? He'd washed their feet, and the next day he was going to wash their sins away. And my sin away. And your sin away. Do you understand the level to which I have taken what I have taught you all these years? I was not kidding. It's not an iteration of, it's not a new version of, it's a complete reversal. And then he says this, now that I, your Lord and teacher, now that I, your boss, now that I, your king, now that I am the person with all power and authority, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet, and you have no excuse not to, because I went first. The kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God that is on planet Earth because the king came to planet Earth is an others first, one another kingdom. And when that saturates the thinking and the behavior of Christians in a community, in a family, in a nation, things changed. Once upon a time, it changed so much the Roman Empire capitulated and declared Jesus a king. He goes on, he says, I have set for you an example that you should, and here it is again, the platinum rule that I talk about all the time, the golden rules, you know, do unto others, you would have others do unto you. And everybody thinks that's what Jesus taught and that was the standard. That's not the standard. He's about to say in a different way the standard that he repeated over and over. We call it, or Paul the Apostle, Paul said it's the law of Christ. It's our new covenant marching orders. He says, I have set for you an example that you should do as I have done for you in all things. If I was willing to go this low, everything is on the table. This is the commandment that eliminates the need for all the other commandments. This is the pathway to great. There are no loopholes when there's only one commandment. There's no workaround when it is this all encompassing. If you want to be great, this is what great looks like. This is what great acts like. This is what great does. And then he finishes with this, a promise. To you, to me, to us. He says, now that you know these things, now that you know these things, you're no better off. But now that you know these things, you will be makarios. You will be fortunate. You will be happier. You will be blessed if you do them. Isn't it true? The happiest people you know are some of the greatest people you know when you define great according to Jesus, because they are the most others first people you know. And isn't it also true that some of the most unhappy people you know have so much stuff? And you think to yourself, how could you have so much and be so unhappy? And Jesus would say, I've already told you. Because great is greater than famous, and great is greater than known, and great is greater than wealthy, and we can't all be famous, known, and wealthy, but we can all be great, and we can all be happy, according to Jesus. Years ago, I read a book, a little book, that was good. It was a good book, but there was one part that was life, I don't know if life-changing, but it made a big dent, and I've carried these quotes around ever since. The book's called Founding Brothers. It's a book about the founding fathers of our nation by Joseph Ellis. And in the book, he makes an observation about George Washington, our first president. And I'll close with this. Listen to this in the book. He says, first, it is crucial to recognize that Washington's extraordinary reputation rested less on his prudent exercise of power than on his dramatic flair at surrendering it. And then this. Upon learning that Washington intended to reject the mantle of emperor, because the United States are like, why? We don't need another president. Just listen. And they wanted to use the word emperor, even though they had left a king. Let's make him emperor, a dynasty. Upon learning that Washington intended to reject the mantle of emperor, King George III allegedly observed, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. I mean, he's great because he's the president of this new nation. He's great because he led them to military victory over a world power. I mean, he's already great. But if he gives up that position, if he gives up that power, if he gives up that authority, this is coming from a king. He says, then he will be the greatest man in the world. Here's what the king knew that you'd have to be a king to fully understand. Greatness, real true greatness, doesn't need a title. And true greatness doesn't need a prop. Greatness just needs an opportunity. And you will have that opportunity before this day is over. And so will I. Don't miss it. Ask, what would great do? Before I do what I normally do, before I respond like I normally respond, before I react like I normally react, before I pretend like I normally pretend, what if I was great? What would great do? Don't miss great. Don't miss the kingdom of God great. Don't miss Jesus. Imagine if we took this literally, seriously, in every arena of life. Imagine your marriage. Imagine your home. Imagine our community. Imagine a world of that kind of great. Don't miss great. It is determining how people experience you now, and it will determine what people say about you later. Don't miss it.